Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. I don't know about you, Matt, but I had Hurricane Mario at my house last night. The rain came down in bucketfuls.
Yeah, it looked like there was a lot of storm. We got some rain at our house. We were away when the majority of it hit, but it was a good storm last night.
Yeah, for about 25 minutes, boy, it just came down like it was no tomorrow. And then it kind of cleared up and it was nice after that. But boy, was it crazy there for a while. Love our monsoons and our tropical storms that come through Tucson. They're kind of fun. And we need the rain. What are we, about 1/12 of the rain that we need for a year?
Something like that.
Yeah, so pretty crazy. Well, good morning, everyone. This is The Morning Voice, and my name is Dr. Ed Ackerley. We talk about success stories on Friday, and then in the second hour, we talk about the University of Arizona and Wonder. We're kind of mixing the two of those because my good friend Rob Lamb is with us from Mighty Dog. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
You graced me and my students this week. You came down and spoke to my creative professional communication class at the University of Arizona. It's kind of fun, wasn't it?
Oh, I tell you, I've been telling people all the rest of the week what a joy it was. I mean, your class was incredibly engaged.
Yeah.
And it was just a great give and take with them. And the follow-ups I've been receiving and emails from them.
You thought that those were all organic, as they say?
After the fifth one, I realized this is an assignment, but that's okay. I'll take them anyway.
Yeah.
But it was just, it really gave me a lot of hope, really. I just looked at them and the back and forth. You don't normally get that. In fact, right. when I usually speak, I see eyelids dropping,
but
not with this class for some reason.
You know, it's two things, observation about my students, which I have to work with them on. One is that they write their thank you notes, and the very first word out of their fingertips or their pen is, I would like to thank you. I am thinking about you. I would like this. And so I'm going to talk to them about flipping that around and have it say, Mr. Rob Lamb, thank you for coming to our class, as opposed to focusing on yourself. So as we talk about creative professional communication, we need to be thinking about the voice that we use.
And so that's words matter.
Yeah,
actually,
they
do. You know, this is one of the things that we actually talked about in your class. Yeah. Words matter. How you use them matter.
Right.
And one of the things that the class, I think, really the most feedback I got from, because people do it, part of the assignment, cherry pick some things that came out. One of them was one of my favorite topics that's come over the years is make sure you take responsibility for your emotional wake.
Yeah, I love that.
That was awesome. And if there was ever a time in our society right now. That was important.
Amen.
It is right now. And so how do we engage
that
in
analogy
healthy...
that you gave was awesome about having a wake in the marina and rocking all the everybody else's boats, and you need to slow down, take a breath, and go slow.
And the fact is we're all human, and that happens. We lose our cool, but then go back and fix it.
Right. I was telling my silly story.
Yep. Yeah. And we both gave some great examples of embarrassing examples of having to go back and fix some bad communication.
And I also think that's good for the students to hear that I can say some stupid things now and then and try to live them down. The other thing that I love what you talked about, which is I can tell them 57 times and they don't listen. But when you started talking about put your phone down and pay attention and listen, I think you really got their attention. And I think that's a good note for all of us. I know I'm guilty from time to time to go to events and be looking at my phone. Matter of fact, when I was running for mayor, I got chastised in the first run. I was taking notes on my phone, on my notes thing. Mm-hmm. And so someone would speak and I would write down my notes. Well, that was interpreted by many people that I was looking at my phone doing other things other than paying attention when I was actually just taking notes. From then on, I put my phone away and said, what it communicates to people is that you don't care and that you're not paying attention. So there's something more important than you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's eye contact. And it's funny because years ago, and I actually started taking notes electronically in meetings.
Right.
And so I got myself a tablet, and I specifically got one that was medium sized so I could easily put it in a pocket. But it was definitely not the size of a phone.
Right.
So that it was clear. So I would communicate to people when I was taking notes, this is my tablet. This isn't my phone. I'm not playing a game on it or whatever. Yeah. I'm not sure how well that worked, but it's part of that communication, that eye contact that a lot of people are missing.
Greg Byrne, the former athletic director, spoke to my class several years ago, and he was going away, and about 5 minutes in, he looks to a kid in the back of the room and says, son, what are you doing? And the kid says, I'm taking notes. And he says, I don't think you are. I think you're not paying attention. I think you're doing something else. And the kid turned white and, you know, everything was. And so Mr. Byrne went on for a little bit. And about 10 minutes later, he looked at the kid and he said, son, I think you lied to me. I think you're doing something other than paying attention. It's obvious you're not. Why don't you take your laptop and go? And he left. And I thought I was going to get sued by the parents, by, you know, oh, my God, he kicked the kid out of class. And but then he made a point to the rest of the students, you know, I'm pretty busy. I don't need to come over here and have you not pay attention. So, and Dick Tomey did the same thing when we had a Coaches for Charity event. He was talking to one of the football teams, and there was a couple of kids sitting in the front, and Dick actually walked up and kicked one of the kid's foot. He was sitting on the floor, and his foot was out, and Dick kicked his foot and said, son, are you paying attention? And the kid kind of didn't answer, and he says, I didn't come here for my health. I'm either going to talk to you and you're going to listen to me or you're going to get out of here. Yeah. Everybody in the room. And I we don't want to go that far, but we do have to have a sense that technology is fantastic. But if we go too far with it, it's kind of distracting.
We live in a world of noise.
Yeah.
And this is what we talked about. How do you effectively cut through the noise,
right,
for the most important things?
Right.
And if you're trying to cut through the noise for everything, not just the important things, then it's just more noise.
Right, right. I sometimes think about the morning voice sometimes. Are we just noise sometimes? And that's why I like to make these events really important and powerful and so forth. Hey, you've got a business that's called Mighty Dog Roofing. How's the roofing business going in these Storm Marios, Tropical Storm Marios and those kind of things?
Well, grateful for the rain.
Yeah.
It's been slow because people don't think about the roof when it doesn't rain.
Yeah.
But we have gotten some great rain last night.
Oh, my gosh.
I was down at the casino for a banquet for the Southeastern, the Greater Vail Chamber, wonderful economic development banquet last night. And it came out, and it was pouring rain. It was wonderful.
That's good for the roofing business, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll get some calls this morning, I would assume.
Yeah. I'm checking. I'm keeping my eye on my phone and on my...
We'll get you out of here in about 15 minutes so you can go make that happen. But how's Mighty Dog doing? Is it doing okay?
Doing okay. Getting better and better. We're moving forward. We're actually looking forward to... launching into in the next couple months, doing windows, actually.
Oh, I'm in.
So we got replacement windows.
It's
part of the Mighty Dog model. I've held off for a year on doing that because I really wanted to make sure we've got roofs down.
Can I do onesies? Can I do this one and then wait a couple months and
we've
do
got a three-window minimum.
Three-window minimum. Okay.
But for you, don't worry, it's five.
Okay.
So,
yeah, well, it's the darn financing. You know, the windows are expensive, but what's nice about them is that they save on the electric bill over time.
And they do, and that's
one security,
of the,
too.
Yeah, it's a security. And the other one, too, is all that happens, and you get that, and it's hopefully, you know, you it matches up that it's pretty close to break even.
Right.
A lot of people get solar for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is it increases the value of your home.
Oh, it certainly does, yeah. And I, you know, back in my, I have a little Arizona room that was kind of an add-on afterthought before we bought the house. And it has those, you know, cheap little aluminum frame.
Oh, yeah, those are the worst.
You can stand on the other side and just feel the heat coming out or the air coming out.
I've got a little thermal gun that I actually will go and I'll check it out, and you can actually see the difference.
Yeah.
And it's a comfort thing, too. Yeah. A lot of times people, you know, will talk to, I've talked to a number of customers already who are thinking about windows because they've known we're moving in this direction. And it's like, hey, this is the baby's room, you know, and this is, well, you got the draft and you're putting the blanket on the baby or taking the blanket off. And it's just like, well, whoa, you know, it's a comfort issue. So, yeah.
Well, I'm in. I'll be one of your first guys because I think that's important. So how do people get a hold of Mighty Dog if they want to get some Mighty Dog help, if they want to call you and get their roof, if it's raining and they have a pot, water dripping into their pot right now?
The all-wonderful Google is the best way to get a hold of it. It's Mighty Dog Roofing, but you can always call us at the office. It's 520-668-9949, but everyone lives on the web, and that's where we are.
So. Great. So call Mighty Dog Roofing if you need some repairs on your roof, or maybe you don't need some repairs. You know, one good thing I think is important, people hop up on their roof, or have you guys hop up on the roof every couple of years just to look, see. It's one of those things we don't think about. But
yeah, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And that's and we're all guilty of that, myself included. You know,
It's kind of like going to the dentist every 6 months to get your teeth cleaned. It's preventative, not...
And we do the free inspections.
Right.
So homeowners, give us a call, and we'll come out, check it out, give you that peace of mind so you can sleep at night and not worry about it when it does rain.
Does the same group do the windows, or is that somebody different that comes out to do the windows?
We got different crews for the, because it's different skill set to do that.
So if somebody wants to have you come out and look at windows as you're getting started into that, you can call again and have them come out and look at that as well.
Yeah.
That'd be great. It's always, you know, just what you said the other day at school, teaching to my class at the U of A. It's the window you look through that's important in life, right? So there you go. I got a new one for you for your Mighty Dog windows. So, hey, let's take a quick break. We'll come back in just a minute, and we'll talk with Rob a little bit about some of the politics going on in Tucson. And then he's got a run, and then we're expecting the new fire chief, Sharon McDonough, is going to be here at 7:30. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice, and that's old Mighty Dog Matt in the playing some tunes for our friend Rob Lamb, who was the owner of Mighty Dog Roofing, Windows, and Doors now. And good morning again, Rob.
Thanks. Good morning.
So you and I have been engaged in some civic things over the last, and one thing, a little bit of old news, but still relevant, I think, in our community. We got the fire chief coming in a little bit, so city politics is obviously something that you and I care a lot about. You went to that Project Blue meeting where the torches and the pitchforks were out and people were screaming at each other and so forth. Amazing, wasn't it? It was an amazing exercise in free speech, but also dysfunction in a town hall meeting. So
the modifier I would use is not amazing.
Yeah,
it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing. I saw people of all ages, as old as my mom, acting out as if they were a three-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And people that I know and respect were physically pushed and knocked down, and including people in their 80s. It was
unfortunate. You know, I've been in a couple of other meetings since then regarding a lot of different things, in regards to the, city governance and so forth. And one of my counsels to the people that we're working with is you can't get so upset and be disappointed in government and then go to a council meeting and scream at the council members and scream at the mayor and scream out in the public square and scream about how terrible everything is. You need to do the opposite. You need to thank them for their service and go in and talk to them about your side of the story and let them listen to you and see if you can come to some sort of collaboration.
You know, we forget every single person we run into is a child of God and made in the image and likeness of God and deserving of basic human respect.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
What comes out of their mouth we may disagree with. The reality is, you know, maybe 0.2% of our society really wants to do harm.
Right.
The rest of us
are. And we have a way to deal with that.
And we have ways to deal with that, and we have people that help us with that. But the majority of the people, clear majority, want a better place. I mean, we live in Southern Arizona. We raise our families here. It's economic development. I'm a big, champion for economic development because it's all about the humans and the families.
Right.
And that's what's going to help us flourish as human beings and as a society. And we have lost the ability to see through the lens of this is a child of God worthy of respect no matter how they act or what they say.
Right.
And that is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And we talk at each other instead of to and with each other.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, on a national level, I kind of get the partisanship, and I kind of get the arguing across the aisle. But I go back to when I was in Washington quite a bit, how the senators would debate politely on the Senate floor, and then they'd go out to the grill next to the Capitol, and have their staffs would all be together, be laughing and having a great time. They were all going out to each other's bar mitzvahs and weddings and all that. They're all friends.
You ever read the book Tip and the Gipper?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
It's just that relationship of, and this is one of the things that conflict itself is not bad.
Right.
Right. It's what makes us better. It's making sure we're arguing about something in a way, but we're doing it in respect and we're vigorously wrestling to get to that optimal solution that's going to be there.
Right.
It's just that that we've lost that respect and we've now lost the ability. What it means is now you have people who don't want to get into that discussion because they're going to be vilified. They're going to be called names. They're going to be pegged as part of something that everyone hates, at least in the media.
Right.
And it's been very, very challenging.
You mentioned that Grant did a great job on Wednesday of talking about free speech is free speech for everybody. And you may not like what somebody is saying, but they're entitled to the same respect and dignity that you would want if you want to say you're part of the...
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good... Absolutely. Really good approach that we have. Well, I know you got to run here, but Ted Maxwell on Tuesdays always talks about civic engagement. What can the average citizen, the average voter, the average Tucsonan do to help us in this regard of, you know, I look at this, we're all in this together. We all live here together. Let's all get along and try and make the place better. What would you suggest if someone wants to try and be a better citizen and a better contributor to the overall good of Tucson? What's a good thing to do?
Two things come to mind. One is, frankly, just get out there with other people. Get off the damn phone.
Right.
Get off the social media and actually interact with other people face to face.
You did last night at that event at the casino with the chamber folks.
It's get out there and do that. The other one is look and dig, and this takes a little bit of work, but look and dig and get actual facts. A lot of us we've gotten trained now to listen to the sound bites and get very excited about a sound bite. And then when you look and realize this was A, taken out of context, B, wrong in general. And so one of the things that we actually didn't talk about in your communications class was when you hear something, before you go and repeat it, ask a few things. A, is it true? Right? So before, I remember I nerded out on, I was hearing about a particular a board member, the county Board of Supervisors, this was years ago, that was very challenging. And for a lot of people I respected said, that this is a troubling person. And I'm not going to say anything. And I nerded out, and I think I read through probably 9 or 10 months worth of board meeting minutes so I could see, how was that interaction? I want to see that and understand it. And it turns out that they were right, I wasn't going to say anything. The other one too, encyclicals come out. We're both Catholic here.
Right.
Encyclicals come out, and people say they cherry pick little pieces. It's like, well, did you read the actual encyclical? It's not long.
Yeah.
Let's get together, let's read it, and let's talk about it.
Right.
And people are instead settling on that little sound bite.
Right.
So
the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is not good. Well, we appreciate all you do for the community. I know you got to get going here. We've got the fire chief waiting to come on board here. So she's going to jump on. And how do you define success?
How do I define success?
Yeah.
Being the best version of yourself.
That's great. Yeah. We can all take a lesson from that and try and be the best that we can be. Rob, always good to see you. The owner of Mighty Dog Roofing, he and his wife have done a great job of building that little business and getting into windows and doors now soon. So go online to Mighty Dog Roofing Tucson, and you can check them out and give them a shout. And we'll look forward to having you come over to my house and take a look at our windows as well.
Sounds good. Wonderful.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Thanks for coming this morning. We're coming up here in just a few minutes. The fire chief will be with us, and we'll do a little talk about her new assignment. She's been with the department for about 30 years, and but she's got a new assignment for the next couple of years of being the fire chief of the city of Tucson. And then we come up on at the top of the hour, we come in with our good friends from the University of Arizona. We'll talk about the Cooper Center, and we'll also talk about the pharmaceutical business. There's a gentleman who just made emeritus, been at the U of A for 40 years. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So let's go ahead and go to break, Matt, if we can. And we're a little bit early, but play a few spots for us. And I'm going to go out and take a picture with the fire chief. So you're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, and this is Success Stories. And we are on fire this morning. What do you think, Matt? I think we are just on fire this morning.
En fuego, Ed.
En fuego, as they say, right. We are just so honored to welcome into the studio Sharon McDonough. She is the new fire chief of the Tucson Fire Department. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've only been at the fire department a little while. So it's, you've only been there for 35 years, so it's just a brand new gig for you,
indeed,
right?
Indeed, indeed.
So first off, congratulations on your new appointment, and you're going to be fantastic, and we wish you all the best in your new assignment. And but you've been there for decades now, and what's it feel like to be the first woman to be the fire chief in the Tucson Fire Department?
It's just a little bit crazy. Like some days I pinch myself and say, how did I get here?
You
know, there's not very many people that ever get to take that role as fire chief, and there's certainly very few women. But I'm so honored to be in the role and in a position to help this department get to the next level of excellence and take care, good care of the troops. So it's exciting for me.
Rob Lamb just left, and he and I are cohorts in crime when it comes to civic engagement and so forth. And so two schools of leadership thought. One is to bring somebody in from the outside who doesn't have a lot of interaction with the team and so forth. The other one is to promote from within. And so we've experienced both of those lately. And part of success in an organization as big as yours is to have the trust of the group that's behind you. And it's great that you have been promoted from within and have 35 years and you know every single person.
Yeah. Well, I try to.
Yeah. Pretty much, I mean, the majority of them, you know them, right?
Yeah. As they come in, you know, there's all the new people that I don't see very often. So they get to come in and I say hi. And it is hard to keep that whole Rolodex going on in my head, but I try very hard to know all of them, yes.
You've been in leadership for a while, so you've had the stress of leadership for quite some time, but now you're the chief mucky muck, as they say. So you started on June 2nd. What are your top priorities as chief? What do you see in your first year of what do you want to do in order to continue to have Tucson Fire be the best it can be?
So I took the seat actually on March 31st, but officially took the role on June 2nd.
Right.
So we really hit the ground running. And the first thing I put in place was really getting the right leadership team in place so they could help me get to the goals. There's a couple things that have been kind of at the front. And the number one thing is good care of the troops. Mm-hmm. I believe when you have a well-cared for workforce, they take good care of the business. So getting their needs met as far as safety equipment, things like wellness attributes, cancer awareness, some of the physical therapists that we have available to them is paramount so that they're healthy and well and able to serve our community.
Right. You gave myself and Sixto Molina, who was my chair of my run for mayor, he and I had a great opportunity a couple of times to ride with it out of Station 1 and go out on... I just have to say, I was telling my students at the U of A the other day that I think in the short time that we were there, I think we went out on about 15 or 18 runs.
Yeah.
Two of them were car accidents. One was a lady that had experienced a heart attack. The rest of them, all fentanyl.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, your guys are the first guys on scene.
They are.
They're dealing with just from a purely human perspective, how those guys do what they do. It is amazing how they approach these situations. And there's people in the, I don't know, people may disagree with me, but I think if you're hooked on fentanyl and you're living under a bridge, that you're at the bottom of where we should be as a human being.
Yeah.
And they're reaching out to those folks in a very compassionate way. And it was amazing to me to watch them in action and see what they do.
Those are really tough ones. You know, we like to solve problems and what we do in those situations oftentimes is kind of a Band-Aid in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What they need is long-term connection to real resources.
Right.
And so it's a frustrating one for our crews because they want to help these people and they know that their ability to do that is limited.
Yeah, I was just blown away, though, by the amount of activity centering. And I use fentanyl as the catch-all, be-all. It may not just be fentanyl. It may be some other illicit drugs involved in that. But to me, as an outsider who works 90 hours a week and is just crazy busy and everything, to pause and take some time out and watch what your guys are handling, to me it just seems like a daunting task. And so caring for your troops and what they have to go through every single day, and some of them are there, you know, they're on for 24 hours at a time or longer, you know, and they get to sleep a little bit here and there, and it's a tough, very taxing.
Yeah. It's a taxing role.
So this caring approach that you talk about, not only for your folks, but also for the community, this is another important thing that you do. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you another personal story. I just think this is important. My mom retired after she tried to get herself fired from our company business. About every 3 weeks, she would do something just to see if she could get fired. She eventually retired about 10 times. And the last time she retired, my dad came to work, and she was home alone, and he went home at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he calls me, and he says, "I think your mom's had a stroke." I said, "Dad, call 911. And hang up, I'm calling you." And I called, and he called, and I went back as fast as I could. When I got there, there was about 9 guys in there, and they provided her, they kept her alive for another 5 years, and they were so professional and so awesome with what they did. And not only taking care of my mom, who was critically in a serious situation, they took care of my dad, who was just distraught as he could be.
I am proud of my troops every day. Our EMS service is second to none. We're really top-notch, always forward-thinking onto the next treatment modalities. We have a great group with our medical directors who provide us, you know, the newest ability to save people's lives. And that's great. Compassion fatigue, the compassion piece is so important.
Yes.
Where they're taking care of the loved ones standing by. We're good at that.
What I like about it too is they're not making any judgments. You know, the police have to come in and kind of make a judgment.
Sure.
As to whether this is criminal behavior or whether this is mental health or whether this is, you know, something we can just deal with here or whether we need to take them away or whatever. You guys don't do that. They come in. They don't ask any questions. They just go in and take care of the situation. And I just think it's just an amazing badge of courage of what they do every single day.
Everyone gets care. Yes.
So I know when the former commander of Davis Monthan Air Force Base taught me something about 20 years ago. He said, if you ever go to the McDonald's or you're at some place and you see a person in their fatigues and they're having lunch or something, walk up and say thanks for your service. I do the exact same thing for the fire department. Every time I see a fire crew, I walk up to them and tell them thanks for their service.
Thanks for doing that. That means a lot to our troops. Yeah. I hear about that all the time. Hey, someone said thanks.
Yeah.
It's rare. It's a rare moment. We'll save people's lives and we don't hear a thing. Yeah. We love the follow-up. We love when we get to someone will come by the station and visit and say, hey, you were at my auto accident a month ago. And the guys love that.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this out loud because maybe it's against Pima County health regulations, but whenever we have an event where we've got tons of food and so forth and it's left over, I always go to one of the fire stations and drop it off for the guys.
And they appreciate that too.
Yeah, yeah. So we've had any number of different events that I do it at two places. I take it, depending on what it is, I take it to the fire station or I take it to Sister Jose Abde's place, Sister Jose's for the women. We take it to one of those two places because they seem to always take it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's great. We're talking with Sharon McDonough. She is the new fire chief of the Tucson Fire Department. Been on the job about 6 months now and doing a great job. What initiatives do you want to kind of move forward with? And now that you've had the kind of the lay of the land and you kind of know what's going on, obviously capital investment is always a thing. Higher pay for the firefighters, which is just continually a problem. But is there any other major things that you're looking at?
I think our biggest thing, you know, as I've shared, employee wellness is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And our ability to serve them so they could serve the public is paramount to us. Mm-hmm. But another big issue is just the demand versus resource issue. Mm. You know, our call load has gone up 60% in the last 10 years.
And you're having to respond with or before the police department gets there too many times.
Yeah, so the difference between us is that we respond to every call with the closest unit immediately, mm-hmm. right? Because life's hanging in the balance if we don't. Police has a queue system that allows them to respond to critical calls rapidly, but other calls are a little delayed in response. So yes, ours are every time we're closest unit is out the door and on scene in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, how many total fire stations are there now?
We have 22 fire stations.
Yeah. Are there any works? I know some of them have been remodeled and they look really nice. Some of the one on Wilmot is a good example of one that's been done. There's one over by the DoubleTree Hotel that's been redone, and so they're slowly being brought up to speed. But any new ones on the horizon?
Our next new one is Station 3, and it is the oldest station that we have. It was built in 1953. It's over there by the U of A, Broadway and Campbell area.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly where it is.
And that one is slated, getting plans drawn, and we are
excited.
It only
has room for two vehicles, too.
It does,
yeah.
This new one will have a little bit additional room.
Yeah, it doesn't have much room, though, because it's kind of landlocked there a little bit.
No, it's landlocked. You're right.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, that's a great one. Well, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk with new fire fire chief, new fire chief Sharon McDonough of the Tucson Fire Department, and she's actually doing two jobs. She's helping the police and helping the fire at the same time. So we'll be back in just a moment. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, and you're listening to Success Stories on the Friday version of The Morning Voice. Our guest this morning, we're very honored to have Sharon McDonough. She is the new fire chief of Tucson Fire Department. Good morning again.
Good morning.
I just, point of personal privilege, we have to mention that your husband is a Tucson police officer as well.
He is. Yeah. We have an interesting family as it comes to public safety.
And God bless both of you for your service to our city. We really appreciate it. You know, you have a kind of a background in public safety communications. And so one thing that always is an issue is response times. And how is technology, as we move in the next 5 years or so, how will technology help us in improving response time? Everybody carries around a multi-million-dollar computer in their pocket and so forth. Right. So you're probably getting lots of different calls from lots of different places. How's that going to help us in response times and moving forward?
So at the communication center, super helpful, right? They have several different types of technology in there that allow them to get to a dispatch code faster, make the dispatch faster. And then for the fireside, we just have technologies that help us mostly on scene. And when we're faster on scene, we go back to having a more ready response system, so we're faster. So even though it's not direct, sometimes it's an indirect result of a technology like our patient care reporting system being more efficient.
How are the lights, you know, where the strobes go off and the lights change for you. Are those all calibrated well throughout the city?
They are, yeah. And we actually have a heart saver technology there. So it used to be this giant loud blast that would just take you from dead sleep to wide awake, just like that. And we discovered that's not healthy for our troops. So now it's kind of a quieter, it starts out quieter and gets louder, allowing you to wake up in a more different way and get onto that truck if you got sleep at all.
If you ever get any sleep.
Other technology we have is drones, which are starting to really be a safety feature for us and allow us to be more efficient in our fire operations when we could get a view from the top.
If you don't know especially if it's a building, but also a residential house and so forth, to be able to see what you're in for before you start sending people in.
Let the drone go in when there's a hazardous materials and get some information before we get the troops in there.
You and I have lived in Tucson a long time, and twice as long as you, because I'm a lot older than you are, but building trust and relationships with the community and the neighborhoods is really important. It was a focus of police chiefs in past and of fire chiefs and so forth. But having this relationship with the community and at great community engagement, that's an important part of your job, isn't it?
It is. And it's the good parts, too. It allows our troops to kind of take a break from the trauma and the difficult calls and really get involved in a happier way. So we go to school events. We get to, you know, put the big hoses up and let the kids cool off in the water. We're also doing a partnership right now with PAC, where firefighters are walking foster dogs out, just taking them out for a little bit. And then we have a meeting next week with the Red Cross to see how we partner on different events in the community.
Right. I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. I had the good fortune, as you know, to ride a couple of times with Station 1, and I had asked your staff and so forth if we could maybe do a little visitation of that beautiful facility and how beautiful it is, and we're working with procurement and with risk management and so forth, because you just don't have an event at a fire station without a lot of legalese. So we'll hopefully down the line we'll have a eat and greet down there and get to see you guys in action. I think it's fascinating. I don't know who can go out on rides, but man, it is fascinating to see them work up close and personal. And even as cool, they invited me into lunch and to have them sit around, and they kind of sit in pods, you know.
The
chiefs and the battalion chiefs and so forth are kind of sitting with us, and then there was kind of a middle ground, and then the young kids were sitting over here. It was kind of interesting
those table talks are almost therapy sessions for us, you know, to kind of go over a call that we went on, talk about the difficulties, the griefs of it, but also the learning moments that say, how do we do better on the next one? And then it's kind of relief time. Maybe we're talking about our kids' soccer game and kind of letting go, that's your family. That's right. Your second family. And those conversations really matter.
There was a young guy that had just gotten some training. I don't even know what kind of training it was. I think it was kind of first aid-ish. It was first aid, but I don't know exactly what kind of training. And it was interesting because after the lunch and the small talk was over and everyone cleaned up, he took about 10 minutes and he said, I'm going to tell you what I learned. And he shared with everybody else what he had just taken away from this session that he had gone to. And I thought that was kind of cool,
too. That's how we learn. Yeah, shared learning.
Sharing that information.
We are, even today, 35 years in, I'm still a student of the job. Yeah. I need to be. Everything's changing all the time.
So what message do you have for Tucsonans about the kind of fire chief you intend to be and to expect under your leadership?
Well, I was born as a middle child. And I am a quiescential middle child.
You get along with everybody, right?
I try to. I at least try to get open up transparent communication between sides. And then, you know, when we get down on paper or get down in conversation, some common goals, we could work towards them together.
Right.
So that's really always been my style. Like, how do we get these opposing groups together towards a common goal? And I think that works well. And I think being honest and transparent about what we're doing, there's no secrets in the fire service, right? There's some private things about people's personal matters. But there's no secrets about the work that happens in the fire chief's office and us opening the doors and saying, here's what we do, come on in, has been really meaningful for our troops.
You know, you've been there for 34 years and you're going to be there for a couple more years, but with all due respect, you and I are at the age where eventually we're going to step aside and let other people take over. And so you'll probably, you know, in the last couple of years of your tenure there, where do you want to see the fire department, say, in a decade or so? You want to obviously be better staffed, better capital improvements, but where do you want to see the whole organization and you launching them in that direction?
The biggest thing I want is for people to love their job and come to work happy and healthy and well.
Amen.
And that they get to go home at the end of their career and enjoy a beautiful retirement instead of worrying about the illness and the things that our job brings. So that's my number one goal. The second one, you hit it on the head, is the resource demand issue, right? Just, it's got to be tenable. Right now, it's a little untenable with the resources we have versus the demand. I'm very worried about the big, beautiful bill that's coming up and any effects about people losing health care.
Yeah.
And how will that, will we then be that health care provider?
Well, thank you so much for being here this morning, and good luck to you in your tenure as fire chief of Tucson Fire. Sharon McDonough, chief of the Tucson Fire Department. We'll come back with The Morning Voice and Wonder on KVOI. Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. This is Friday, where we talk about Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona. This segment is sponsored by our friends at Caruso's Italian Restaurant on historic 4th Avenue and our good friends at Hughes Federal Credit Union. Our guest this morning is Colin Waite. He is the director of the Cooper Center for Environmental Learning and the Department of Teaching, Learning, and Social Cultural Studies at the University of Arizona College of Education. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Ed.
We just had you on just a couple of weeks ago because, and your other hat that you wear is you're part of the AIA, Arizona Interscholastic Association, a set of referees that referee high school football throughout Southern Arizona. Thank you for your service doing that as well. So you were telling us you had a little bit of lightning delay last night, huh?
Yeah, we didn't get our game in last night at Tucson High because of the storms. But, you know, the desert needed the rain, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, you got one tonight?
Yeah, I'm at Amphi tonight against Rio Rico, so hopefully we'll have a good game.
That's great. Well, that'll be great. We'll have Dale Lopez shout out a little note to you there. He's doing the PA tonight. So
yeah,
we'll
Dale is actually on the Cooper Center advisory board. Yes. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a good man. Well, thank you for all you do for the young people in high school and getting college football, which I think is a great sport. I played it, and I think it's a wonderful thing for kids to play. My grandsons are now at that age, and they're starting to get excited about being able to play in high school. So we'll see how that goes. Let's talk a little bit about the Cooper Center for Environmental Learning and what it is and why it's such an important part of the University of Arizona.
Yeah, Cooper Center is known to most in Southern Arizona as Camp Cooper, and our mission is to connect children and learners of all ages with the Sonoran Desert. We have got immersive education-based outdoor adventures and programs. It's all about deep relationships with nature and fostering a love and understanding of the natural world. And it's operated as a partnership between Tucson Unified School District. It's open to all schools and educational groups. And it's a unique example of the university's land grant mission to serve our community through sharing the wonders of nature and inspiring kids to live more sustainably on our planet.
It's a little bit about history as well, because The Cooper Center, Camp Cooper, sits on the traditional homelands of the Tohono O'odham and the Pascua-Yaqui peoples. So what does that mean to the center? How do you bring forth that relationship over time?
Well, human beings have been living in southern Arizona for thousands of years, and the native peoples of the Sonoran Desert really understand that humans are an integral part of natural systems. And so we see our work at Cooper Center as a natural extension of that understanding, helping each person that we talk to understand that their actions for good or ill have an impact on the environment that we're part of.
Our guest this morning is for Wonder is Colin Waite. He's the director of the Cooper Center, or Camp Cooper, for Environmental Learning and Department of Teaching and Learning and Sociocultural Studies in the College of Education at the University of Arizona. So Colin, the Cooper Center at the U of A emphasizes diversity, inclusion, and community. How do those values shape, especially in this climate, national climate of getting away from diversity, inclusion, and community? Why is this still important when you talk about Camp Cooper?
Well, I think it's important that our staff and programs reflect the diverse communities that we serve here in southern Arizona. And our goal is to provide everyone in Tucson, no matter their background, with access to learning experiences in our Sonoran Desert classroom. The natural surroundings of our city are some of its most important resources, as you know. And if we want to protect it and care for it, we've got to train and guide our next generation of environmentally responsible citizens and leaders. And that's everybody, no matter. And so just providing that access to an experience like this for kids that maybe don't have that opportunity.
So you kind of answered this next question, and that's, you know, why is it important for young people to connect both in that natural environment, but also the cultural history of the land and we live in a unique biosphere here mm-hmm. in southern Arizona with the beautiful landscape that we have and the wonderful weather, and even last night with the rain. I got a bucket full of rain at my mm-hmm. house, and the lightning storms, they were beautiful to watch from the porch. Why is it important for young people to understand that whole connection with where we live and the land we live on?
Well, I think, the natural history and the cultural history of where we're at is providing really important context for everything we're experiencing in the world today, whether it's natural or societal. And so understanding why things are the way they are now allows us to have important and critical conversations and make decisions. And so when a child or a student of any age understands and appreciates where we live and how it functions here in the Sonoran Desert, as you said, it's the most unique and diverse desert on the planet. People who have that understanding can take steps personally and community-wide to ensure that, the systems of life that support us as humans living on this planet can survive and thrive.
People are often blown away by the fact, we say there are 7 million visitors a year that come to Tucson, they're blown away by the fact that it can be 112 degrees on the valley floor, and then a short 25-minute drive away, they're up in 70-degree weather on Mount Lemmon. And it's amazing the change, and as the elevation goes up to all the way up to pine trees at the very top, it's kind of really cool the way our ecosystem works here in southern Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kinds of learning opportunities do you provide for students in the broader Tucson community when they come to Camp Cooper?
Well, the most important thing that we do is help children connect with and build a love and appreciation for the wonders of nature. We work with kids as young as preschool and all the way up through adulthood, and many of them have never had a true outdoor adventure. You might not know this, but the average American child only spends 6 minutes a day outside.
Wow.
And we're talking about a generation of kids that is not like when you and I grew up, and right. where playing outside was just a natural part of being a kid. And for so many kids in Tucson, that's just not the way things work anymore. And so being able to provide an experience like this, many of them have never been outside of the city before or experienced a campfire under the stars. So having a learning experience that help kids make this connection while also teaching them the science of the Sonoran Desert is really what we're all about. We need to be able to provide this opportunity at Camp Cooper and at other desert experiences to as many kids as possible.
Do you have a favorite story that illustrates this, of how Camp Cooper has inspired a student to think differently about their environment?
Yeah, I'm actually wrapping up my 22nd year at Camp Cooper. And so there are hundreds of stories of kids that I feel like have had that kind of transformational change. You see the light bulb go on. But actually, a couple of my favorites. There's a thing here in Tucson called Mr. Nature's Music Garden. And Mr. Nature is this guy named Anthony Aldinger, who came to Camp Cooper as a child. And now he has a program of music and nature for really young kids. He actually just had an incredible concert at Fox Theater where he recorded a new album of children's music. And then I also have a friend named Ray Clements, who came to Camp Cooper as a kid from Lineweaver Elementary School back in the day. And he has a company called Natural Building Works here in Tucson that does sustainable design and building, everything from materials to practices in construction to education. And he's leading a community of small businesses that are just doing incredible work around environmentally friendly construction. We're doing a construction project at camp right now, renovating our sleeping cabins, thanks to the successful bond in Tucson Unified School District. And one of the sustainable pieces of the project is hempcrete blocks that are going to be used for insulation on the outside of the buildings. And this company, local company, Old Pueblo Hempcrete, with Michaela Machado and her crew, are doing this incredible work to design a more sustainable building material. Hemp is one of the oldest building materials on the planet, but it needs to have a kind of a resurgence in the United States as a way to build more sustainably.
That's great. It's kind of cool to hear you talk about adults who long ago went to Camp Cooper and experienced it and now are kind of working in the industry or working around the periphery of the industry because they recognize the wonder that is there at in our ecosphere and being part of it now, whether that be to do something in the arts or to do something in sustainability for building and so forth. What a cool result of having somebody exposed to our beautiful natural desert.
Yeah, I really love the fact that you can use the natural world to teach anything. It's not just about science. It's about the arts. It's physical education. You can read and write about the desert, and kids are more passionate about what they're learning if they love and appreciate it. And the desert is just a natural palette for that.
And I would think that even just some kids have probably never been around a campfire out in the middle of nowhere in the desert by themselves. I mean, you know, they probably had a barbecue in the backyard or a little fire ring or something, you know, but to be out in the middle of nowhere and to have a little fire and kind of enjoy that too, that's also an experience that you would probably never forget. Where is Camp Cooper located, by the way?
So Camp Cooper is located about 20 minutes west of downtown Tucson. It's just off of Gates Pass Road before you cross over and go over the top. It's kind of tucked back in the neighborhood right up mm-hmm. against Tucson Mountain Park.
Right. So it's really easily accessible to your crew and the kids can get there when they need to get there, and they're close enough to Tucson to make it an easy jaunt away. How does the Cooper Center prepare future generations to become environmental stewards and problem solvers?
Well, it's all about the programs, and everything we do is really hands-on. It's discovery-based. You know, I talked about the different ages of kids that we work with, and so we've got age-specific programs that really focus on that positive emotional connection to nature, while also teaching really key ecological understandings like how energy flows through natural systems, inner relationships between living and non-living things, plant and animal adaptations for survival. And then we want kids and any learner that we're working with to use their knowledge and experience to lessen their own impact at home and in the community. Everything from energy and water conservation to spending more quality time outside, which we know is so important. Mm. And then, you know, to think about advocacy on the environmental issues that face our community.
That's great. I know Bill and I used to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning and come back at 6 o'clock at night and spend all day outside in the summertime. And
that's right. You waited till the streetlights came on, right?
And kids don't do that much anymore.
No.
We'll come back after the break and talk some more. Our guest this morning on Wonder on the Morning Voice is Colin Waite, who is the director of the Cooper Center and Camp Cooper, the environmental learning in the Department of Teaching, Learning, and Social Cultural Studies at the College of Education at the University of Arizona. Our sponsors for Wonder are Hughes Federal Credit Union and Caruso's Italian Restaurant in historic 4th Avenue. And you're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to Wonder on The Morning Voice, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Our guest this morning on Wonder is Colin Waite. He's the director of the Cooper Center for Environmental Learning and in the Department of Teaching, Learning, and Social Cultural Studies in the College of Education at the University of Arizona, respectfully referred to as Camp Cooper, which is where everybody knows it by. On Fridays, we talk about the good things happening at the U of A, and we call it Wonder, and it's sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue. And here is a gift certificate from Caruso's, which I'm giving to you.
Awesome.
And that'll be for you to take your family out to Caruso's.
Thanks very much.
Good sponsors, and also our friends at Hughes Federal Credit Union. Well, Colin, a program like the one we have at Camp Cooper needs community support. Can you talk about how listeners can help sustain the Cooper Center or Camp Cooper through and by supporting the Camp Cooper for Environmental Learning through the Crowdfund Arizona campaign?
Yeah, almost all of Camp Cooper's operations, including programs and staff, are funded through generous contributions from individuals, businesses, and foundations in our community. Right now, we're crowdfunding in support of our programs and staff, working to raise $60,000 during the month of September. People can donate at crowdfund.arizona.edu/Cooper. And if you donate this weekend, we've got a generous donor who's matching the next $10,000 in gifts. We've raised just over $20,000 towards our goal with a little less than half of the month to go. We also have a couple of other interesting and unique opportunities. We are a nonprofit partner of El Tour de Tucson this year, and we are recruiting riders for the first time. And so if you want to ride for Camp Cooper, you can check out the El Tour de Tucson page, and we're one of the nonprofits that's listed there. We'll actually be attending the Loop-de-Loop event that they're having at Rialto Park tomorrow morning from 7 to noon, music and food on that event as well. And then on Thursday night, this coming Thursday, the 25th, we're hosting a trivia night at Craft Drinkery on Speedway in Swan in support of our programs. It's wide open trivia, lots of different subject areas. You can build up teams of six, and all the proceeds from the evening are going to go to Camp Cooper. So lots of opportunities there.
So the challenge would be kind of like those couple stories that you talked about of the people that had gone to Camp Cooper when they were little guys and now are either building sustainable projects with building materials, or they're in the arts or whatever. If you went to Camp Cooper when you were a young person, this is a great call out for you to give some support to a great event. So go to crownfund.arizona.edu/Cooper, right? Is that where they go for
yep,
that?
Yep, you got it.
And if you didn't go to Camp Cooper and would like to support a young person that is going there from TUSD, but also from all of our schools around the area, make a donation. And if you can do it this weekend, that's a good thing, because we got a donor that's willing to match whatever you put in. So if you, even if it's just $10 or $15 or whatever, the cost of a cup of coffee or a Danish, if you can do that, it would really go to a really important part of the service that the University of Arizona does. You know, people think, Colin, that because it's the University of Arizona that, you know, like I helped the U of A band, everybody thinks the U of A marching band is flush with cash, and the $1 million TV contracts and so forth that the athletic department gets goes to the band. It doesn't. They raise all of their money themselves.
Right.
Not all of it. I wouldn't say all of it. They raise a good portion of their money themselves, and I help them do that. And it's the same way with Camp Cooper. It's you get some resources. You, for instance, you're paid by the U of A, but the center itself needs some help from the community, and so getting people to help us with donations is a good thing.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So Crowdfund Arizona campaign at crowdfund.arizona.edu/Cooper, if you can do that. So you've talked about some other ways that people can get involved. They can sponsor different things, come to the craft thing. Is there other ways that they can, if they have an idea of how to help you, can they get in touch with you guys and help spread the word?
Absolutely. And you actually brought up a really great one, which is we're always looking for Camp Cooper memories. Over 150,000 Tucsonans have been through programs at Camp Cooper since 1964. And we're always looking for folks to reconnect and get involved, whether it's telling their story. We always look for volunteers. We talked about our mutual friend Dale Lopez at the beginning of the segment. Dale's actually one of our advisory board members. Those are all volunteers from the community helping out with everything from programs to facilities and construction, marketing and communications, event planning, fundraising. And then that networking component is really big. And so if you know someone, or if you are someone who supports connecting children with nature, we definitely want to talk to you about how we might be able to collaborate and get involved. We're always looking for new ways to connect with people.
Great. Our guest this morning on Wonder is Colin Waite, who is the director of Camp Cooper at the University of Arizona. So you said about connecting. For listeners who do want to stay connected or get connected for the first time, Where can they go online to learn more about making that donation to crowdfunding, but also just to follow your work and to get more information? And, you know, a lot of our listeners might have some grandkids that are in the fold now, and, mm-hmm. and maybe they haven't been exposed to Camp Cooper like those of us that were been around for a while are exposed to. How do they connect and get signed up and get their schools involved, and how do you make all that work?
Yeah, all the information about our programs is available at coopercenter.arizona.edu. It's a place where people can learn about the different programs that are available. If you want to stay connected to us, you can sign up for our email newsletter, which goes out once or twice a month. You could even make a donation directly from that page. And if you're someone who maybe you want to know, hey, I wonder if my kids can go to Camp Cooper, really what you want to do is connect their classroom teacher with the website so that they can see the resources that are there. Our team very regularly goes out to schools to do presentations or invites teachers to come out and see the place so that they can get a sense of what's available for them. So that's the easiest way to connect. And we're very active on social media, wildlife cameras, videos from our programs, testimonials. You can find us on Facebook and on Instagram at Cooper Center AZ if you're interested in following and seeing that. We're always finding incredible shots of desert critters. We did a night hike that was a community hike, over 100 people on Saturday, and we saw scorpions with babies on their backs, scorpions eating dragonflies, rattlesnakes, javelinas and deer. Lots of incredible animals that are out there, and we're always trying to find cool pictures and videos when we see them.
I'm going to throw you a curve because I didn't ask you this before, but what if I wanted to volunteer and be part of those experiences? Like you just, do you all have to be staff-oriented and all part of your system, or can a volunteer come and help out?
No, we love to have volunteers help out with programs as well. There's a simple background check because we're working with educational programs and with young children, but it's very easy to get approved as a volunteer to work with us at the U of A in an outreach program like Cooper. You get an opportunity to go on the hike with the kids and help us facilitate our programs.
Yeah. So if you're an adult who only spends 6 minutes a day outside and you need to get out too, it might be good to have you make contact and see if you can get involved in that. What is one message you'd like listeners to carry with them about Camp Cooper and the Cooper Center for Environmental Learning?
You know, I thought about this for quite a while and actually went outside to reflect on it because I wanted to really think about it. And what I would say is that just remember that human beings need regular quality time outside, all of us. No matter how old you are, no matter what you do in life, it makes us happier, it makes us healthier, more empathetic to others, better prepared to connect with each other and engage with our world. So find some time to enjoy the wonders of nature this weekend and try to make it regular, a regular habit for you. It's so important. It's integral to your mental and physical health.
Great advice. And what is something at the University of Arizona, of course you're probably going to tell me Camp Cooper, but do you think is full of wonder at the university?
Well, I certainly feel like the outdoor spaces at the University of Arizona are full of wonder. And something that I recently reconnected with was the programs on Tumamoc Hill.
All right.
And it's an easy way to engage with nature. It's right in town, so it's an easy place to go for that walk. And Elise Gornish and her team at Tumamoc Hill are just doing incredible work with outreach and education, in addition to the really important ecological research that's been happening there since the early 1900s.
That's great. Special thanks to our guest for Wonder this morning, Colin Waite, director of the Cooper Center and Camp Cooper. The Cooper Center for Environmental Learning and the Department of Teaching, Learning, and Social Cultural Studies in the wonderful College of Education at the University of Arizona. We'll be back after the break with the second half of Wonder, sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union. You are listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. On Fridays, we talk about the good things happening at the University of Arizona, and we call it Wonder, and it's sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union. Our guest for this segment on Wonder is Dr. John Reagan, Professor Emeritus in Toxicology, at the R. Ken Coit College of Pharmacy at the University of Arizona. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And congratulations. You've been granted emeritus status, which means, for those listeners who might not be familiar with that, what does emeritus status actually mean?
It means even though you're retired, they think you can still contribute to the university, but they don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
It's not granted just because you retire. You have to apply for it.
Right.
It's reviewed by some committee with the university, and they decide whether you deserve it or not.
Right, right.
Too.
So your contributions that you've done over your years since 1989, you've been with the college, and you have a lot of research that you've published, 170 peer-reviewed papers, more than 15,000 citations. The university has bestowed this emeritus position on you because of your contributions to student learning outcomes, research, and all the wonderful things going on in the college. And that's an important thing, because you have both research and institutional knowledge that is important to the young people coming in, but also it helps the administration, the people that are running the college, to kind of lean on you a little bit now and then when they have a question, right?
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah. So looking back over all those milestones that you have over the last, how many years is that? From 89, I have to do the math, 36 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the, if you were to look back over that, what is a milestone or one of the milestones or discoveries that stands out to you most from during that time that you were there?
Well, during my time here at the university, the major milestone was the discovery of this, it's called a EP3 prostaglandin receptor, and it's pretty in the weeds in terms of trying to understand what its significance might be. But the bottom line is, people for a long time only thought there were a couple ways that this thing called prostaglandin worked, and when we discovered this new thing, it was quite a surprise. No one expected it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gotten a lot of citations based on that.
And that's called molecular pharmacology. Is that what that's called?
I would call it molecular pharmacology. So, how drugs work at the molecular level.
So you really are in the weeds when you say that you're in the weeds. You're really down to the building blocks of life and so forth, and how
it's about as deep as you can get.
Right.
X-ray crystallography is the next step. Right. I didn't want to go that deep.
Right, right. Our guest for Wonder is Dr. John Reagan, Professor Emeritus in Toxicology at the R. Ken Coit College of Pharmacy at the University of Arizona. You've had the opportunity to work with a couple of Nobel laureates, Drs. Robert Lefkowitz and Brian Kobilka. How do these experiences shape your research path as you approach the lab and your mentorship of students?
It had a huge impact. I was with Dr. Lefkowitz for about 8 years, from the time I finished my PhD at the University of Arizona until I got my faculty position at the University of Arizona. So it was about 8 years. Which is a long time for an interval between getting your degree and getting a faculty position. But the project that I worked on was a very, very difficult one. And it's basically like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 5 years to do that.
Wow.
And when we accomplished that, it was a major discovery. And Brian Kobilka was teamed up with me in that work. He was kind of at the same level I was. Dr. Lefkowitz ran the whole operation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically been a major milestone in our understanding of how drugs work.
That is amazing. Speaking of which, you're a 10-time recipient of the college's Basic Science Educator of the Year Award, more than anyone else in the college's history. What's driven you and your approach to teaching? When you talk about this, making it, making these in the weeds complex things, especially when it comes to helping students think deeply about how and why drugs work rather than just memorizing them?
I think the reason I've been successful teaching in the College of Pharmacy is that I was in an ideal situation. So I love pharmacology, I love understanding how drugs work. And I have an audience who are going to be future pharmacists, so they already have an interest in drugs. So for me, that's a win-win situation. It was, you know, I've already got what they're interested in. And so what I tried to do is basically build on that, take advantage of the fact that I've already had half the work done.
Right. Do you have any favorite memories of, say, a particular student or a class or a moment when you saw what you were doing in terms of mentorship and teaching click with somebody and make a difference in their understanding of drugs? Could be a whole class, could be a semester, could be a time in your life when it all clicked for you and it clicked for them at the same time?
Well, we're talking about, you know, 36 years of teaching and whatnot.
I'm with you. I'm right behind you. I'm almost out the door with you here, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been there 35 years. So
I was kind of thinking about the question, and there are a couple moments that stick out. One was I had a student many years ago who was having major difficulty passing the exam.
Mm-hmm.
And we have four exams and then a final exam. So he failed the first one badly, failed the second one badly, and then he came to see me. And so we started, you know, working, trying to figure out how to get him on track. He took the third exam and maybe some slight improvement. And so we met again and we were talking. And as I talked with him, I realized that he was a coach. He taught swimming at one of the high schools, and he was a swimmer himself. And he spent, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day, I don't know, doing this a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an athlete, too. I went to college based on my ability to do gymnastics. And so what I did was I told him that when you teach swimming, it takes hours. You spend a lot of time with your students. I say it's no different. And he heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he fourth exam, major improvements, final, excellent. And he got a B in the course, which is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a moment that was pretty cool.
Made it real for him and made that's great. And you probably have hundreds, if not thousands of those over, I don't know about you, but I teach about 1,000 kids a year. Kids, I call them kids, heck, they're in their 20s, they're young adults. And, you know, if you multiply that times 35, 1,000 times 35, you know, between 20 and 30,000 students I've affected over the years, I bet you're probably in that same range. Huh?
No, actually, so I teach pharmacists, so it's much smaller cohort of people. So our average class size these days is about 150, and when I started, it was about 60. So I estimate that I have helped train somewhere in the order of 3,500 pharmacists.
Yeah, but look at them. They're all pharmacists now.
They're all pharmacists. Yeah. I can't go into a pharmacy in Tucson without being recognized.
There you are. There's my teacher. I love it.
You have to be careful about which drug prescriptions you're being in.
That's why you go to Nogales every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
So mentorship, obviously, is very central to your career when you're mentoring young people who are going to be pharmacists. It's pretty important. What is a good quality of a good mentor, and how have you tried to embody that?
I think the most important quality, certainly one of the most important, is listening. You have to listen to the student. If you don't do that, you'll get nowhere.
Right.
And when you listen, you can then ask questions where I try to learn more about the person, like who they are, and you know, how, what things kind of motivate them, and so there's some empathy helps, but it shouldn't be automatic. It should be used when it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of all those things, but mostly just listening and caring about their success.
Right. Well, we appreciate what you do. We're going to take a quick break here. I'm going to give you a certificate for Caruso's Italian Restaurant on Historic 4th Avenue. They are one of our sponsors. They've been in business since 1932, and one of the founders of Caruso's, the son, who was actually second generation, there's four generations that have been involved, was a U of A professor for about 45 years. So, he has passed away now, but his family is still carrying on, and they love the U of A, and they love the people that are coming on The Morning Voice. So we got you a gift certificate to enjoy Caruso's Italian Restaurant on Historic 4th Avenue. And our other sponsors are good friends at Hughes Federal Credit Union. You're listening to KVOI, and this is Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona, on The Morning Voice. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm right behind you, Dr. John Reagan. A couple days off, that's what I need. Maybe I can get Professor Emeritus someday if I continue to do my work at the Eller College. Welcome back to The Morning Voice, and I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. On Fridays, we talk about the good things happening at the University of Arizona, and we call it Wonder. It's sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union. Our guest is the wonderful Dr. John Reagan, Professor Emeritus in Toxicology at the R. Ken Coit College of Pharmacy at the University of Arizona. Again, congratulations on receiving the emeritus status, and thank you for joining us this morning. So here's a good question for you. Now that you're emeritus, what kind of projects do you want to work on? You obviously want to do a little bit of meeting with students and so forth, and some mentorship that you've been so noted for. But and you've come up with a couple of important things in the history of your research in order to solve the human problems in terms of pharmacology and so forth. What do you want to do in the next couple of years?
Well, in the next couple of years, I'll continue to be pretty highly involved in terms of being at the college. I enjoy the environment. It's what I've done for basically my life. It's hard to just switch to something else. I do photography. I like that a lot. I'll probably get more involved with processing some of the, I don't know how many thousands of prints that I have.
I do have to tell you, by the way, I don't know how you, are those prints all digital?
Yes.
The library has a great service right now. They have a grant right now, and you can go over to the library, and they help you. You have to do it if you have some time. You have to do it, but you can schedule a time, and they'll help you categorize, sort, order, put them in a format that you want. Even if you have 35-millimeter slides from the 70s, they'll help you organize it all. And that's going to be one of my jobs I do when I retire, is to put all of our photos in some kind of order. So.
He actually did something like that for the celebration they had for my retirement.
Oh, right.
So I put together...
You had to look at a million pictures. Yeah.
I put together 160 pictures and whatnot and had it run automatically. It took about 20 minutes. But it covered how I got there, my family, kind of the whole works.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, I just want to touch on this. I don't want to make a big deal of it as much as just to acknowledge that obviously the federal government is going through some reorganization, and institutions like the University of Arizona and some of the major colleges have had kind of a shock of getting funding pulled for research and so forth. What you all do in the College of Pharmacy and research on drugs and how it's going to solve illness and stuff. This is a concern, I would assume, that you and leadership at the college are all just concerned about where will the funding come from and how will you be able to continue the important research that you do?
Well, it's very concerning what's happened. You know, basic research in the United States depends on the federal government. I don't think people fully understand how it contributes to our economy and development of business. A lot of the things that are discovered through basic research that's funded by the federal government don't have an immediate impact. They take a while to be felt. And it's very hard, even when the system's working normally, to know who to fund, because it's very difficult to know what the future's going to bring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to have a major impact. You know, some areas like Alzheimer's, they're cutting some of the funding, and that's going to be a huge issue for our demographic. It's going to have an impact,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be a negative impact. And there's no easy replacement for it. I must say, at this moment, it's not a complete bust. It seems to be selective in terms of the types of funding they're cutting and whatnot. So it's not like... we have no money.
Right. The president did announce a couple of new initiatives. The Department of Defense just gave some money for a grant and so forth. So some money is flowing, but it is disconcerting to kind of wonder whether or not the program is going to be fully funded for the next few years. And not that all families need to get back in line and budget, and municipalities need to manage the budget that they have on a regular basis. And the university is no exception. There's certainly... waste, fraud, and abuse, and all sorts of different kinds of sectors. It's just the way the topsy grows. But when you're talking about life-saving research on pharmacology and things, it's an important thing to make sure we have enough money to continue that research.
It
affects all of us. Yeah.
People fully appreciate just like how many people we employ that are
right.
based on funding. I mean, they can be janitors, they can be lab techs. And when you don't know if the money's coming in, it's very difficult to plan anything.
Right.
And so there's a lot of stress on the faculty right now.
Well, congratulations on your appointment as emeritus status in the college and what you've done for the young people that you've taught over the years. We call this segment Wonder, and it has to do with the wonderful things going on at the U of A. What is one thing at the University of Arizona that you think is full of wonder?
Yeah, I was thinking about wonder and in what it means. I mean, wonder is something you don't fully understand. It's something that you appreciate. Usually it's its beauty or some property. And it also kind of implies you don't really know what accounts for that. So it's, I would say things like space exploration, understanding the universe, you know, it's, you look at the sky and you wonder what's out there.
And U of A is one of the tops in the world at this this research.
And even, you know, things like music. I don't understand how people come up with music. I think that's kind of a wonderful thing.
Right. And we do a great job in the College of Fine Arts and other places in developing great artists and so forth. And you do a good job of mentoring young people into the field of becoming a pharmacist, and we thank you for all you do, and good luck to you in your position as back at the college as an emeritus status and learning and growing with the students as they come through.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our special thanks to our guest for Wonder, Dr. John Reagan, Professor Emeritus at the R. Ken Coit College of Pharmacy at the University of Arizona. Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union. Coming up on Monday, we have Lydia Randa will present Rainmakers, Ted Maxwell on Tuesday, Grant Kruger on Wednesday, Tom Moulton on Thursday, and I'll be back next Friday with success stories in the first hour and wonder stories about the University of Arizona in the second hour. Thank you, Matt Neely, for all you do. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Let's get a little bit of rain, and let's have some fun. And U of A is going to win their game. Not going to lose a game this weekend. That's great.
Correct.
Yeah. Bye week for the University of Arizona. This is The Morning Voice. We'll see you next week.